This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're brought to you by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. Also, as we are live here at the Super Bowl in Atlanta, Fox Sports Radio is giving away five Fire TV Edition smart TVs in honor of Super Week and the big game. To enter for a chance to win, keep listening this hour as we'll be announcing the keyword for you to text. For more info and rules, visit foxsportsradio.com. All right, I want to build a little bit more on that Rich Paul analysis that I was making. And by the way, we're scheduled to be joined by Jerome Bettis. The bus is going to park his way on the set here a little bit. We're also scheduled to be joined by Mark Schlereth. Both those guys in this hour. In hour three, we'll talk with Petros Papadakis out in L.A. as we usually do on Tuesday mornings across this great land. So I am intrigued in general by this Rich Paul move, because yesterday about this time on this show, news broke that Anthony Davis had demanded a trade. And immediately, I think the reaction from a lot of people in the media and also fans was, oh, look at how smart Anthony Davis has been. He set up this opportunity for himself. I actually, the more I look at it, think that Anthony Davis is not getting the best advice. Now, part of having an agent is the agent can be the bad guy for the client sometimes. That's why you have the agent. He creates a level of remove between yourself and other people during negotiations. And you want your agent to be making smart, strategic moves that lead to the best possible outcome for the client. I don't see that here. I really don't. Like, the more I analyze this, and this was kind of my initial read as well, Anthony Davis doesn't have any power here. This seems to me to be a move made by a powerless guy to try to look like he's actually powerful. But when you strip down all of the surrounding circumstances, Anthony Davis has said, I'm not going to re-sign with the New Orleans Pelicans. Okay, that's fine. I'm going to turn down a five-year, $240 million extension. More power to him. You must really hate where you're playing to turn down a five-year, $240 million extension at his age. But he doesn't have any control for the next year and a half. If the New Orleans Pelicans want to, they can keep him under contract all the way until May of 2020. Right? Until whenever the season ends, or theoretically June, maybe, if they made the playoffs and they made some kind of run. And what's wild about that to me is, last year the Pelicans were good enough to be one of the four best teams in the Western Conference. He's like, I want to play on a winner. Dude, they built you into a good enough franchise to win a playoff round and also win a game. If you remember, they were down 2-0 against the Warriors in round two. And then they won their home game against the Warriors in Game 3 before Golden State came back and shut the door and basically said, no, you have no chance. Now, if I'm Anthony Davis, I'm sitting around saying at some point that Warrior franchise is going to implode. LeBron James is 34, whatever they do with the Lakers. Potentially, you could have a window then with the Pelicans to be better and maybe make a run at being able to contend for a championship or being able to win more than one playoff series. But if I'm the Pelicans, I'm sitting back here, I'm saying, okay, why did Rich Paul decide to go public at all? It seems to me that he has misidentified where the power in this relationship actually lies. He could have the opportunity to go privately around to a bunch of different teams and request that they put forward their best offer. But this seems like a desperate Hail Mary play to me by an agent and a player. When you really analyze it from legitimate, logical perspective, the only reason why he would make that move at all is because he's trying to desperately play from a position of weakness and hoping that his Hail Mary pass is going to be complete. Right? This to me, if you want to put it in a sports analogy context, this is not a two-minute offense being run by Tom Brady or Peyton Manning streaking down the field for a winning touchdown. This is you're down late a couple of touchdowns and you're throwing into the end zone hoping you're going to get lucky and you're going to complete a Hail Mary. And what's just shocking to me is how few people are actually able to analyze this from just a pure logical perspective. If I'm the Pelicans, this actually makes me less likely to trade him because I think you have put the franchise in an incredibly ugly situation and we're all going to have to answer questions about you hating playing in New Orleans for all of our fans and all of our media for the rest of this year. If Anthony Davis and his crew just says, you know what, we're not happy, they can still have the back channels working, they can still have a team make an offer before the trade deadline, but why in the world would the Pelicans trade him now? There's a lot more value they can get for him at the end of the season. Moreover, if I'm Anthony Davis, I would rather wait till the end of the season and then be able to see how the other free agent markets are laying themselves out, where guys are going to go, before I make a decision about where I'd like to be traded to. And by the way, even if you're Anthony Davis, you're still in a position of power then because you basically have a Paul George or a Kawhi Leonard situation where if somebody decides to trade for you and you don't want to play for them, at worst, you're only there for a year and then you can go anywhere in the NBA you want. So this, to me, seems to be a really fundamental misplaying of the hand by Anthony Davis and Rich Paul as agent. Now, one of the challenges you learn when I was practicing law, people say, man, practicing law would be great if it weren't for the clients. Because sometimes you got a client who's just not behaving logically. And it may be that Anthony Davis is so unhappy that he's like, screw it, I want to go public. Because remember how this story broke? It was Rich Paul reaching out to Adrian Wojnarowski and just telling him straight up, these quotes, we want out. I just don't understand it. I don't think it's very logical. I don't think it made a lot of sense. Am I crazy or are you guys following along with my line of thought here? Danny G, I mean, like, I'm all about leverage. I'm all about using it to your advantage. I actually enjoy negotiation, whether it's buying a car, whether it's buying a house, whether it's negotiating with advertisers, anything else. I like that interplay. I don't have a problem with it at all. I don't have a problem with Anthony Davis believing that he has great value as talent in the NBA and wanting to control his future. I think that's smart. I think it's intellectually sound of him to make those decisions. I just don't think his play here is chess. This, to me, is him playing checkers and the executives in the NBA looking around and being like, dude, this is a chess match, and you just walked in and tried to play checkers with us.
Well, I will give you this. There was an interview with the Pelicans' Drew Holiday yesterday, and he was about to cry on camera when they were asking him about the unibrow. So if it's going to be months of that, then, yeah, that organization, you don't want to deal with that. But the players in the NBA have the power right now, and this started years ago with LeBron. Up until that point, though, Clay, the owners have the power.
But he still doesn't have power here. I understand in general, in theory, the idea that the players have power, but he has a year and a half under his contract where he has to play in New Orleans and he has no other options, right? So you don't have a year and a half is a long time.
The power is you're disgruntled and most teams don't want to deal with that. We're seeing this in the NFL right now with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, but so the NFL is a completely different animal, but I think he's fundamentally misplayed it. I don't understand how this in any way works to his advantage. You can get everything that you are getting now by privately going to the Lakers and saying, hey, make an offer. And then you can leak the fact that the offer was made, and then Anthony Davis doesn't look like the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like here, to me, Anthony Davis looks like the bad guy because he's saying, I don't have any interest in playing for this franchise anymore. I want out, and he's still going to play theoretically 30 more games for the franchise. Why not go publicly to privately to the Lakers, say, hey, we want out, put together a plan, we'll leak it to the media, that the Lakers are making an offer for Anthony Davis, and then Anthony Davis looks like the good guy here. He doesn't look like, you can be the guy who's pulling all the strings behind the scenes,
yeah,
but then Anthony Davis can be like, look, I enjoy playing for New Orleans, but it looks like the Lakers are making a run for me. The Lakers have a better chance to make the playoffs right now than the Pelicans. If a deal worked out, you know, I got to do what's best for, you know, if the Pelicans think it's best to trade me, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't play it smarter right now if you are Anthony Davis. Like, it just, to me, this is, I'm upset, I'm going to throw a fit, and I'm going to go public here, and it just doesn't make, like, I don't see, I'm all for using leverage, I'm all for maximizing your advantage. I don't see in any way. So people say, well, now people know that Anthony Davis doesn't want to stay with, you know, think that people don't know that already? His agent could call every GM in the entire league that he thinks has cap room and tell them, hey, Anthony Davis wants out. Trade deadline, in case you didn't know already, is February 7th. Make an offer. We'll leak it. We'll leak that offer if he really wants to go to the Lakers. Hey, Lakers, there's nothing preventing you from making an offer beforehand. To me, all this does is make him look like a jerk if you're in the New Orleans market.
Well, it also potentially gives you months and months of a bidding war. And you said yesterday that that's what you would want. If you were in his shoes, you would want a major bidding war.
Yeah, that's fine. But the bidding war is going to happen in the summer anyway. In other words, this is why I'm saying they're playing chess and thinking they're playing checkers. I mean, sorry, they're playing checkers thinking they're playing chess. And for people out there, checkers, a lot easier game than chess. You're playing against sophisticated NFL GMs and executives. And to me, you just came out and tried to, like, play checkers with him instead of chess. This is not a smart strategic move in my mind by Anthony Davis. Like, kids, I don't see how this plays out.
Kids nowadays are impatient, especially in sports. So, well, but that's, wouldn't that's you expedite you, the whole situation?
But he's not expediting anything.
If the Lakers throw a deal the Pelicans' way, that is undeniably amazing.
But you going public and saying you want out doesn't make that more likely at all.
It puts pressure on the Lakers.
Maybe.
No, maybe, not it maybe. It does put pressure on the Lakers. I think they have to know. Magic Johnson
but
has
the Lakers,
to know.
But the Lakers don't control whether the deal is made. The pressure on the Lakers doesn't matter.
True. But they have a lot of pieces. And our friend Jeff Schwartz, he retweeted this out yesterday. I was laughing because here's a conspiracy theory for you. Somebody said, what if the Pelicans behind the scenes knew that this was coming? And so they asked the Lakers to just keep resting LeBron so that they could look at the Lakers'
yeah,
young
saw that.
Talent.
I saw that tweet. But again, the point is the Lakers don't control anything. So when you are sitting here, if I'm paying somebody millions of dollars to advise me, then they need to advise me in an intelligent fashion, and I need to be making moves that aid in what my goals are. I don't see that in any way. To me, all you're doing is antagonizing the team and making them less likely to trade you, because why would they trade you now when the value and the number of bidders they could have in the summer are substantially more? Like, unless he is saying behind the scenes as well, which should be a part of the story, and not only that, but I will refuse to sign an extension with anybody but the Lakers. Unless he's trying to cut the leverage of the New Orleans Pelicans out from underneath them, this doesn't make any sense at all to me. And even the way this has been covered by the media doesn't make any sense to me. Frankly, most people in the media are not that smart, and they're not very good at negotiating. It's why they make, you know, $35,000 a year as beat writers. I don't understand why this play was made. It just doesn't make logical sense. I actually think by going public, there's a strong argument that Anthony Davis, not just in the court of public opinion, certainly in the New Orleans area, has undercut much of his value, and you could have done this all privately without needing to go public at all. And if you're saying, okay, he's putting pressure on the Lakers, okay, I certainly understand the idea that he's putting pressure on the Lakers, but the Lakers don't control this trade. Right, the Pelicans have to agree to it. The Lakers can do whatever they want. I don't understand how he would be increasing pressure at all, because Rich Paul could have gone to the Lakers already and said, hey, put together your best offer. We'll leak it out publicly. And the Pelicans should just come back and say, hey, you know what? That's not a bad offer, but we want the Celtics and every other team to have the opportunity in the summer to also enter this sweepstakes to ensure that this franchise gets the most value it can for our best asset. I don't think when you really read it through – that it makes a lot of sense. It's an intriguing story, I don't know necessarily that it's a very smart story.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis. Weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We are live on Radio Row, Super Bowl 53, inching closer and closer here in Atlanta. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price when you're ready to buy a new or used car. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. I am here with Mark Schlereth and Jerome Bettis, simultaneous here on Radio Row. And I want to start off with both of you guys with a big kind of broad question. Does it matter for Tom Brady? I know it matters in the context of how the season ends, but if Brady is 5-4 at Super Bowls or he is 6-3, same thing with Belichick, does it change the way we talk about them in 20 years? I'll start with you, Jerome Bettis.
I think it shouldn't. I think about this. When you talk about the Buffalo Bills and the four straight Super Bowls in a row, that's still an accomplishment, right? So we still acknowledge that. Yeah, they you know, hopefully they should have won. You know, you wish they would have won one.
Yeah.
But you still acknowledge that they were an elite team for a lot of years. So when you look at this argument, yeah, It'd be great if it was 6-3 over 5-4, but the fact that he's been to 9 Super Bowls through the course of his career tells you that, you know, he's just about has a 50% rate of going to Super Bowls.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's incredible that he could maintain this type of excellence over this period of time. It's something that we've never seen before in the NFL.
Yeah. For me, listen, I'd like to see the Bills win one, just not the one I played against them.
Right.
Let's put that out there. I just think it's absolutely amazing. Think about this now. Tom Brady in the league for 18 years, 17 years, because 1 year he tore his ACL in week two, didn't play.
Right.
17 years. In those 17 years, they've been to 13 AFC championships.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It is unreal.
Unreal.
So the accomplishment of getting there, here's what just blows me away, is I'm human, you're human. You know, I mean, the whole thing about not being sated by success.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'd line up Sunday and play. You'd line up Sunday and play. It's Saturday. It's Monday through Saturday that I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to train. I don't want to work. I don't want to study. I don't want to do any of that anymore. I'm tired. And the fact that, like, I'm calling games. I was doing a Miami game this year. And so I sit down with Danny Amendola. And I say, hey, man, just you and me off the record kind of. Well, not off the record, but just you and me talking. Like, what is it about Brady?
Yeah.
Like, what did you learn from him? And he's like, I learned how to be a professional. Like, we get done with a game. This is, you know, we get done Sunday, we win, whatever. We walk out of the stadium, everybody gets their little bag lunch and
right?
You know how it works, right? So everybody's sitting on the bus. You walk onto the bus with your bag lunch and your beer, and Tom Brady has already downloaded next week's opponent from that Sunday.
Yeah.
And he's on the
looking
bus.
At what they did defensively.
They're heading to the plane to fly back to New England, and he's looking at the Bills from 2 hours earlier, 2 hours previous, studying what they do on defense. That's, like, to not be sated by your success and still being able to grind like that, that's what I find fascinating about Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, and that is interesting because I think no matter what you do for a living, if you have success, you start to cut corners a lot of times. You know, people think that success, you know, I mean, you recognize, like, am I doing more than I need to do, right? Like, figuring out exactly what you do, what you could do. I'm curious, we're talking to Jerome Bettis, we're talking to Mark Schlereth. Jerome, obviously, you're a Steeler. And I want to get your opinion on this too, Mark.
Yeah.
What's going on with the Steelers? Like, when you look at what's, for a long time, they were the model NFL franchise. You're going to point to a franchise that did it right, you know, in quotation marks, right. And then it just seems like the wheels have come off. What do you think is going on right now? If you were there giving them advice, what would you say they need to be doing? And what did you think about Le'Veon Bell in general?
Le'Veon Bell, I thought he was one of the best running backs in the NFL, period. Yep. You know, no question about it. There's a reason why the Steelers were, I think, 30th or something, maybe 31st or something in rushing. It's a reason that was the case, because they didn't have Le'Veon Bell. Yeah. So
you don't blame him for sitting out and like all that.
You know what? I think I blame both, because both parties needed to make this deal happen.
Right.
Because it benefited both parties. Le'Veon, it benefited, and it benefited the Steelers. So I thought both parties should have found a way to get this deal done, because both sides need each other. And
yes.
I think that's the one thing that we have to understand. So that's the one problem. They should have had Le'Veon Bell in. But I think from that moment on, it became a fractured locker room. And people had to then start picking sides, right? Okay, whose side are you on in all of this? And then from that, now it becomes, okay, well, I've got to look out for myself now, because if Le'Veon is, they hosing Le'Veon, right? This is what these guys are thinking in the locker room. Now that selfish mentality starts to erode the locker room. It was already there.
Yep.
Okay. But it would peak out from now on in, so and you could contain it.
Who's responsible for that? For creating that culture? Is it Mike Tomlin?
Absolutely. And Coach Tomlin has owned that.
Yeah.
You know, he said, hey, you know what? I've got to look at myself first. But I think part of it is, you know, wanting these guys to be professionals, wanting them to have a little bit more room, allowing these guys to kind of police themselves. And that was part of the process. Some coaches have a little bit more of their foot on the guys, you know, next, if you will.
Yeah.
Like Belichick, you know, he's very firm in how he handles things. Well, Coach Tomlin said, okay, I'm going to take a different approach. These guys are men. I'm going to treat them like men. I'm going to back off a little bit, let them police themselves. And as it turns out, you know, maybe you need to now come in and be a little bit more firm with these guys so that they know where the standard is, so that they don't cross that line. That's what's happening.
We're talking to Jerome Bettis and Mark Schlereth.
I think one of the big things about playing this game, and one of the things you don't want to have happen to you, is you don't want guys to become independent contractors.
Yeah, right.
So, like, if I'm an independent contractor, I'm looking at the game through my eyes, going,
that's right.
I just need to handle my business.
Yes.
And to get the best out of a football team, man, we have to be sacrificing for one another. It's amazing what you can accomplish when nobody cares who gets the credit.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
And so when you have that mentality, you're a great team. When you become independent contractors, because guys are worried about their money, guys are worried about their playing time, guys are worried about
the stats.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden, everything breaks down. And it's, you'd be surprised, just the razor-thin line that you stand on as a football team all the time between being, you know, sacrificial and then being independent contractors.
One guy who's an independent contractor, it seems clearly also with the Steelers right now, is Antonio Brown. What in the world, Jerome Bettis and Mark Schlereth, we're talking with here live, Radio Row, Super Bowl 53. What do you do if you're the Steelers about Antonio Brown? And based on what you've seen from the Rooney family, is there any way in your mind, Jerome Bettis, that he comes back?
I think there is a way. The Rooneys, they are, you know, pretty clear in how they operate. But they're not opposed to second opportunities. They're not just hardliners, like, that's it, it's over. But also they're realist in understanding that there may not be a good scenario that they can deal with this situation, in the sense of a trade may not be viable. You got a lot of money that's involved. They just redid the contract. They just gave him the big signing bonus and, you know, all those kind of things. So, and for an organization, if I'm looking at Antonio Brown, I'm saying to myself, okay, it looks as though the 3 years is doable. And $21 million, not 3 years. Oh, yeah, we can make that work. But the minute that you fork over a first-round pick or two first-round picks or a first round and a second round or a first to the third, he's going to say, okay, I've got leverage on you. I want a new contract, right? So now, regardless, you're going to be very leery of making a deal that gives the Steelers the correct amount of compensation for that. So the Steelers, from that standpoint,
they're in a tough spot.
They're in a very tough spot. I think you got to try to find a way to coexist, if you will. And I just think that's the way you got to try to figure out.
I think I agree with all those things, but I think the issue that you get into is that you've acquiesced to Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
You've allowed this to become, like, we hear the discourse that they've had. This has been forever.
Yes.
Like, this has been 5 or 6 years of this that's going on. It's just come to a head now. So the issue that you get into, if you're the Steelers, is Mike Tomlin has allowed it to happen. You're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen.
Yep.
He's allowed it to happen. And I think for Mike Tomlin to get his finger back on the pulse of the organization and to have that authority, at some point you have to say, we are no longer going to put up with this. See, you know, that's interesting about players.
Even if you get less value for him,
Yes. You know, it's amazing. If you read some of the articles that are out there right now, and I understand he's a hard worker. When he's on the practice field, he works hard. He does all these things. But when you show up, and this is just my personal opinion, you show up late to something, you're essentially saying, my time is more valuable than your time.
Yeah.
I'm more important than you. And you want to be a championship organization, you cannot allow that attitude to permeate your locker room. Guys look at him and go, man, I want the house away from, you know, away from St. Vincent's College, right? I want what he's gotten. Like, they've acquiesced to him on a consistent basis. I want those things. That's not championship. And the Steelers, to me, I mean, I grew up being a Steeler fan. I love the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were my team as a kid,
yep.
Right? I wanted to become a football player because of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, when I see Mel Blunt or I see Jack Ham or Jack Lambert, or, like, man, I'm like a little kid, man. I get like, oh, my God. Like, right. When the first time I met Mel Blunt, Mel said to me, he goes, hey, Mark, how you doing? I was like, I was cool. I was like, hey, Mel, good to see you, man. Crazy. Then I ran to my room and called my wife. I was like, Mel Blunt knows my freaking name, yeah. Man. He knows my name. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, that's how big of a fan I was. And for the Steelers, man, they're a championship organization. You cannot allow that to go on in your locker room.
So how do you solve it? Like, so if you're Ben Roethlisberger, right, you were in practice for a long time. You ever seen your quarterback and your wide receiver, your star wide receiver, get into what is really like a little league spat, right? Like, where a guy's throwing football at somebody else and, like, he just walks out of practice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's crazy, right?
That's crazy. That is crazy. And so here's what I do, right? If I'm in a situation, I say, okay, tell you what. You're not being traded. Come to work when you're supposed to come to work. That's the end of it, right? And I prepare as if he's not going to be with us, right?
Yep.
And you come when you're ready, right? Here's the parameters. If you don't come here, this is what happens, right? You lay everything out very crystal clear. And as those things start to happen, then you do exactly what you say you're going to do. Okay, if you don't show up by here, we're going to fine you every day, such and such. So you're very crystal clear in terms of the repercussions of your actions, right? And then by the time the games come, it's very clear if you're going to get in line or you won't get paid for this year. And so at some point, he's one of those guys where he wants the adulation and he wants to be on the field,
right?
And you take his opportunity to be on the field away, guys straighten up very quickly when they see there is no more wiggle room to be had. And then you take the money away, boom, boom, boom. But you have to do it systematically, and you cannot waver in one bit. You let them know, here's what the deal is. We're not trading you. Get that out of your head. We'll see you in August. Have a great offseason, and that's the end of it. And you're very clear, and if you don't show up, we're fining you. Starting this day is going to be $12,000, $18,000, yep. Whatever the number is, that's what we're fining you per day. Send them the letter. Let them know this is the deal. That's it.
We're talking to Jerome Bettis and Mark Schlereth, two Super Bowl winners here. Who wins the Super Bowl? I'll start with you, Mark.
Listen, man, two very evenly matched teams, two great football teams, very exceptionally well coached. I think everybody wants to point to the differences. I think there's more similarities than differences. I think these guys, you know, it's funny, and you would think this is pretty standard, but it's not. Like, it's not only this is what we do, let me coach you what we do, but with these two teams, it's this is why we do it. And not only why we do it, but this is how it's going to affect us. So we do this in the first quarter, and this is what the benefits will be in the second quarter and then third quarter. And so when you sit down and talk with the players from these teams, they have more football knowledge and understanding than any other teams in the league. They just get it. That said, I mean, I think it's going to be a great game. I'm picking the Patriots just based on experience, having been there, their ability to game plan, their ability to adjust during the course of a game. But I think it's going to be a great game.
Jerome, you're here with FedEx. Tell us about that, and then tell me who you're picking.
That's a good one. Well, FedEx, and it's the Air and Ground NFL Players of the Year Awards that we're going to recognize the top quarterback and running back performances of the 2018 NFL season. And this year, it marks the 16th season of FedEx Air and Ground program. And with that being said, the voting is open until this Thursday, the 31st. You can go, it's two places that you can vote, the NFL Twitter page, or you can go to NFL.com/FedEx, and you can vote for the ground and the air. And then also, FedEx is going to make two $20,000 donations in lieu of the winners to the USO. And they, in particular, the Pathfinder program. And that's a program that helps service members and the military families reacclimate into civilian life. So it's a great opportunity to help in raising of the money. And that money is going to go to a great great source.
So who you got in the game?
I'm going with it's hard to go against the Patriots. I'm rooting for the Rams. I got drafted by the Rams.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the Rams, but that doesn't say much because the Patriots, they know how to win. If you take something away from them, it doesn't surprise them because during the course of the season, they have had to play that type of football. So whether it's they throw the ball 40 times, you look at one or two games during the season, they had to do that. If they had to run the ball 40 times, you look at a game or two, that was their game plan. So they game plan regardless. And if it doesn't work, they throw it out and they keep going. And that's the difference with most teams. Most teams, they have to do one or two things. They got to be able to run the football in order to get play action. Well, that's not how the Patriots operate. If it doesn't work, they scrap it and they go to what works. So I think with that being said, I'm rooting for the Rams, but I think the Patriots.
Outstanding stuff as always, boys. Appreciate it. Mark Schlereth, thanks, Jerome Bettis.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
All right, we're going to be joined now for 2 minutes by Deshaun Watson. He is sliding into the seat with us right now. Appreciate him joining us, Houston Texans quarterback. Deshaun Watson, you're with Old Spice.
I am.
You are here a very short amount of time, so I want to ask you this. When you see a guy like Jared Goff, 24 years right. old, and what you guys did postseason, advance, everything else, how excited are you walking around to be doing Radio Row to expect to be here yourself one day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big expectation for myself, for the Houston Texans. You know, I'm only 23, so hopefully when I'm 24, I'm sitting in Miami and in a hotel getting ready for a Super Bowl. So it gives me a lot of motivation, a lot of confidence that, you know, no matter what age you are, what your year you are, you know, in the NFL, that if you have a good year and, you know, go about your business and game, that you can be an opportunity to do the same thing.
Now, you were on the field watching Clemson put the beat down on Alabama.
Right.
Be honest. Maybe not you weren't surprised that they won. Yeah. How surprised were you they beat down Alabama like they did?
Honestly, I was very surprised, especially the score, the way of the Alabama played. I thought it was going to be a closer game. I wasn't expecting it. I knew that we were going to win. I knew that we have, you know, the opportunity to win. But I wasn't expecting a beat down like we did.
Should Trevor Lawrence be the overall number one draft pick if he were coming out this year? Would you draft number one?
For sure. I'm taking little bro. I'm going to take him.
Outstanding. Who's your pick for the Super Bowl?
I mean, I just want a good game, but if I had to pick, I'd go Rams.
Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins, he's the best receiver you've ever seen?
For sure. He's the best receiver I've played with, for sure.
Outstanding stuff. Hey, man, we appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck next year, potentially being in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.